It's The Takeaway. I'm Arun Vanagopal in for Tanzina Vega.
The reason that we won tonight in New Hampshire, we won last week in Iowa, is because of the hard work of so many volunteers. And let me say tonight that this victory here is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Unlike in Iowa, this time the results are in right on time. Bernie Sanders there speaking to his supporters after being declared the winner in New Hampshire's primary. And while last night was a strong showing for Sanders, Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, Joe Biden once again underperformed. The former vice president made it clear that a surprise victory wasn't going to happen when he left New Hampshire early Tuesday to focus on South Carolina and its February 29th primary. So, with Biden and latecomers like former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg counting on later states to propel them to the nomination, how much does New Hampshire actually matter? For more, I'm joined now by Amy Walter, host of Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway, and national editor of The Cook Political Report. Hi, Amy.
Hey, Arun.
All right. Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg have had the strongest showings in both Iowa and New Hampshire. Amy, why did their campaigns connect with voters in both of these states?
Arun, that's an excellent point. I think
Isn't
what
it?
We have, yeah, see, you know how to do this. Look, what we have here, at least at this moment in time, is Bernie Sanders has been able to keep together a core of the coalition that propelled him in 2016. And right now, if you look, we obviously don't have the official final results in Iowa because there's still discrepancy over these numbers. But if you look at Iowa and New Hampshire, basically what Bernie Sanders has is about 25-26% of the total vote. So that's the really core of his coalition. Now, normally you'd say, well, that's not enough to get you the nomination, but it is when the rest of the vote is getting split among three or four other candidates. Buttigieg has been on the higher end of that split, picking up 26% in Iowa, 24% here in New Hampshire, but he has by no means coalesced that lane. And this is where the momentum from New Hampshire really matters. Not only can Bernie Sanders say he won, yes, it was very close, yes, he gets the same number of delegates as Pete Buttigieg, but he goes into a state where he is much better organized, much better known, which is Nevada, and where Pete Buttigieg has to contend with the fact that there is a population there that he's not done very well with at all, and that's voters of color.
Right, and this brings us to the point that New Hampshire, like Iowa, two states that are overwhelmingly white, so should we hold off on reading too much into the votes, or are they fairly predictive?
All right. So in the past, they've been very helpful in predicting, especially who the Democratic nominee is going to be. The Democratic nominee, you go all the way back, 1992 is the one aberration where a candidate who won Iowa or New Hampshire or both went on to win the nomination. But we also have never had a candidate since 1988 on the Democratic side who has not won the majority of the African-American vote. In this case, we are looking at the possibility that one of those streaks is going to get broken. Those historical norms is going to get broken because of the possibility, again, that Nevada, South Carolina are going to play a bigger role in winnowing the field than New Hampshire and Iowa. And because Super Tuesday looms so quickly after South Carolina, March 3rd, that's where most of the delegates are coming from. And we may end up, I mean, Arun, this is where we're getting to the point that in the process that worries people a little bit like me who aren't so good at math, is that we may be getting into a fight about that actual thing, math, delegates. The challenge right now for the Democrats and whoever wants to be the Democratic nominee is that these are not winner-take-all primaries. You win delegates by congressional district and by winning statewide. You have to hit a 15% threshold of the vote in order to get delegates. And so it's hard to build up a big delegate lead, but it's also hard if you're far back, like, say, where Joe Biden could be, to actually catch up. But it also means that if the field keeps getting split up like this, that we may end up at the end of March without any one of those candidates with a path to getting a majority of the delegates, and we end up talking about a contested convention. Mm-hmm, I'm not there yet. Mm-hmm. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but the fact that the field is this split is really important.
And is that kind of convention just the absolute nightmare for the party?
Theoretically, yes. No one wants to go into their party convention, you know, just a few months before election day with questions about who the nominee is and how quickly they will get unified, especially if we get to a place where, let's say there's one candidate who has 40-45% of all of the delegates or the total number of votes cast, but the person who ends up winning the nomination is someone who has 40% or 32%, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to sell that to the supporters of the candidate who has the most delegates and the most votes why they didn't get the nomination. But right now, I think there are a couple storylines coming out of Iowa and New Hampshire. One is Bernie Sanders' strength is real. He has not proven yet that he can break his ceiling of support. But again, we've only had two contests and they've been very crowded contests. So he has a chance now with the field winnowed down to show that he can expand his base. The second is the incredible shrinking Biden campaign. And to come in fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire, he's obviously, as we saw last night, pining all of his hopes on South Carolina, a state where he's been polling really strongly throughout this process because of his strength among African-American voters. But, you know, it's still a question mark about whether he's going to be able to regain his footing. And then the final question mark is Mike Bloomberg. As we get closer to Super Tuesday, where he's on the ballot, will he be able to benefit from either, one, a still divided field, or two, a worry among the non-Bernie wing of the party that there's no obvious frontrunner?
So last night seemed to go pretty smoothly. Does that mean that the party can move on past the whole mess in Iowa?
Well, Arun, I'd like to say yes, because it would be nice to know that we can just sort of count on election nights being normal from here on out. But we have a couple things to remember. The first is Nevada is a caucus state like Iowa. And while the turnout in Nevada is usually lower than Iowa, this is a much newer process for Nevadans. There are signs, there's been reporting from the Nevada Independent, which has done great work in covering the race in that state, that like Iowa, there are questions about the technology that's being used to get results, questions about whether the volunteers who run these caucuses are prepared for what could come down the pike. So we may have some more, you know, questions. As we go deeper into the process, we also have places like California, which has the biggest delegate haul on March 3rd, where, you know, they do early voting. And so getting the final count from California, and they also have mail-in ballots, could take us a little while. Not that there will be a disaster, in other words, where we don't know what's happening. It's just we may have to wait to find out the final delegate count there. So, look, I think Iowa was a unique meltdown, in part because the process of a caucus, especially one that carries so much weight, just it does not make any sense in the 21st century. And the fact that it has still endured is a testament to the power that these early states have in the process. But I don't know that they can justify that much longer.
Amy, Elizabeth Warren came in at like a distant fourth place last night. What's going on with this campaign?
Yeah, I think there were two interesting storylines. And I was up in New Hampshire. We did a politics with Amy Walter from up there. And what you could see from New Hampshire voters was a real sense that, if they worked for Bernie Sanders, they were looking for an alternative who they thought would be the best matchup against Donald Trump. And what you could see, a lot of them early on were looking to Pete Buttigieg. And then I think the debates really set the stage for what happened on Tuesday, which is Amy Klobuchar really came out aggressively, swinging both at Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders. She was basically positioning herself to be that person who would pick up the non-already committed to Bernie Sanders voters. Elizabeth Warren sort of shrank from the stage. She was very passive, I guess, is the right word. Mm-hmm. She didn't seem to be aggressive or acting as if she really wanted to get the votes of New Hampshire voters in the way that Amy Klobuchar was, and it paid off. And so she comes in third place instead of where the neighbor to New Hampshire, Elizabeth Warren, should have been. And Bernie Sanders really has consolidated the voters that initially were with Elizabeth Warren, those very liberal voters who had been behind Elizabeth Warren over the summer, started to move away, and now are behind Bernie.
Amy, you mentioned the issue of non-white voters, especially in the states to come. I'd love your thoughts on something Eric McDaniel, editor of NPR Politics podcast, tweeted last night. He said, there are only three candidates with greater than 10% support among non-white voters essential to winning the Democratic primary: Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. And any other candidate has, at best, an implausible path to the nomination. Is he right?
You do have to be able to win those voters. But the question, Arun, is how divided are African-American voters, Latino voters? In the past, we've seen it gets down to two candidates. One candidate in the Democratic nomination fight has been able to consolidate almost entirely that vote. In 2008, it was Barack Obama. In 2016, it was Hillary Clinton. But what happens if that vote is divided three ways? The winner may end up being the candidate who doesn't get all of the voters of color, but gets enough to be able to win.
Amy Walter, host of Politics with Amy Walter on The Takeaway and national editor of the Cook Political Report. Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you, Arun.